for TV.
Hello and welcome back to Too Hot for TV with Dylan Reese, everyone's favourite host, and Joe Ford, the other guy with the other podcast. We cover things so you don't have to, and that's certainly true today. Because what are we doing on this anniversary week?
We're doing the Scream of the Schalke. Scream if you want to go Schalke, as they say in the fairgrounds.
Yes, we are. We enjoying it so far, boys?
I'm not having the worst time of my life. I'm not going to planning on revisit this anytime soon.
I'd agree with that.
Experiencing this with you fellas is more enjoyable than experiencing it on its own, watching it. But I do think, I said the word serviceable in the last story, I do think this is a perfectly serviceable Doctor Who story so far. It isn't making any great mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, we're not opening a new era on the Twin Dilemma or Time and the Rani, you know. He's telling an archetypal Doctor Who story with lots of monsters and the army and a grumpy doctor and a new companion, and that's quite a sure foot to start with.
I can say it's a lot more enjoyable watching it with you guys than it was by myself. I travel a lot for work, so I spent a night in a hotel room alone watching Scream with the Schalke, and I felt very dirty afterwards in a way that, like, I've watched some dirty things in hotel rooms, but I really had to make sure the volume was down for this one.
That is the saddest image of a Doctor Who fan I've ever had. You know?
You've got your Scream of the Schalke DVD in one hand and the tissues in the other, and you've had to go with Scream of the Schalke. But why not both? I don't mind it on paper. I've got some sort of issue with taking it seriously as a Flash animation. Like, and I mean taking it seriously in the way that this is meant to be the new Doctor Who. If Scream of the Schalke came out on TV, or it came out as an audio, or as a book, as the brand new Ninth Doctor, I think I'd be behind it a hell of a lot more. There's something I can't take seriously about a brand new era when it sort of looks like this.
Yeah. When they bring out the animated series as part of the Hooniverse, and we, the three of us, come together to do the commentaries on that, we'll return to Scream in the Shack. We'll make big comparisons as to how the two styles of animation look, because now it would look extraordinary.
Yeah, I'm also wondering, like, how this compares to things like The Infinite Quest and Dreamland, which I think I've seen them when they came out, or maybe I didn't. Maybe I only saw one of them. I'd be interested to see how they all stand together.
I will be consistent there. Like, I've got no interest in watching them. And I might have seen a bit of The Infinite Quest, but I've never seen Dreamland. And it's just that sort of... It just doesn't... It's not drama. Like, wow. It's interesting that I like comics. Wow. I like the DWN comics, but not this.
Join us next season, where me and Luke Malloy will be looking at all the animated Doctor Who stories in some detail.
Add it to the list.
I will say though, I said earlier on in this that I recently watched the first two episodes of Death Come to Time, right? And I went in with low expectations. I don't know why, but I think it's a bit divisive, that. And the first 10 minutes of Death Comes to Time, with this fabulous, like, universe-spanning conflict, and this terrible general, and Jacqueline Pierce being murdered, and I was like, I just want to watch all of this right now. That's a very different approach to what this is doing. Like I said, this is sort of mired in cliches. That was doing something completely sort of revolutionary and exciting.
I think for me, who loved Death Comes to Time at the time and still loves it now, I think this is why this was a bit of a damp squib at the time. Like, in my mind, that and Real Time were the sort of Doctor Who I wanted at the time if I wasn't going to get it on TV. And so to suddenly have this, which is a bit more back to basics and with a slightly less charismatic Doctor, I'm a little bit like... Okay.
Slightly less charismatic Doctor.
He's getting better.
Are you kidding me right now? I might say terrible things about McCoy and Big Finish, but he's leagues ahead of Richard E. Grant.
I'm getting a Schalke Doctor tattoo on my butt cheek, so...
Oh, well, I'll see that quite a lot then, won't I? Before we go into episode 3 of Scream of the Schalke, can I just bring up the book? Because this was novelised for BBC Books by Paul Connell, and I really loved the book. It really came alive in prose, probably because Richard E. Grant had nothing to do with it whatsoever. But actually, Cornell writes very nice prose, and it's I think it's about 150 pages long or something like that. It's not, and then there's like a behind the scenes of Screaming a Shauka in the second half of the book. But this sort of pacey archetypal Doctor Who story, it really came alive in prose.
That's interesting.
So I would suggest anybody who's not interested in, you know, the stuttery animation of Screaming a Shauka, go and seek out the book for a reasonable sum of £550 on eBay and you'll have a hell of a read.
Okay. I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's not like anything. It's not like the visuals blow you away, and it's not particularly the audio that does anything either. So, but the, I think we all said that in part two, the story is perfectly fine, if not quite engaging and good.
Yeah.
I can remember during you know the big Shauka invasion towards the end, and it goes properly worldwide in the book, and we go to point of views of characters that haven't been in the books at that point, and he does that Russell T Davies thing of giving a character one scene and making them really vivid. So I do wonder if script writing isn't Cornell's wheelhouse, you know, like writing books is his thing. And yeah, so well, this,
by
this
the translates. Sounds of it, his two TV scripts were heavily rewritten, wasn't it? Were they?
Yeah. For all accounts, yes.
But at the same time, I don't think, like I think, again, we keep saying this is a serviceable script, so I'm wondering with a little bit more time and a, you know, a little bit more money, how good this could have been. But we'll never know, will we, ultimately? Because Christopher Eccleston and Russell T Davies ruined it for us.
Well, like, would you say the script for Rose is serviceable?
I mean, I think Rose is. I think Rose has got some pacing issues. I think it takes until season three for Russell T Davies and co. to really nail the pace of new Doctor Who properly, and the sort of the structure of episodes. Not to say there aren't great episodes within that, but no, I've always struggled with Rose a bit. But it got 10 million viewers and relaunched the series for a whole new two decades, so what do I know?
I'm not big on Rose, but it's doing a different job to this. It's trying to make an impact and be loved by everybody.
Yeah.
And be as open as possible.
I'm 3 for 3 with Rose because I'm not all that impressed with the plot of it. But I think the idea of telling the entire story from the companion's point of view was the boldest thing it did and the cleverest thing it did.
Yeah.
And so we're still not thinking like that here because we still open with the Doctor stepping out of the TARDIS, even though, you know, people might be watching this that have never seen Doctor Who before. Like, well, who is that man? Why is he walking out of that strange box?
You know, every time we watch a Moffat episode, you complain that it doesn't start with the Doctor walking out of the TARDIS and just exploring. What does this say
that's
about
just
you?
Just because I like to annoy you, that's all.
Well, speaking of annoying Luke, should we watch another episode of Screaming the
Oh, yes, please.
Shall I count us
off? Can you do a narration of the title sequence?
Who
again,
hasn't
please?
Counted in yet? Counted in. Joe.
No, I can count in. I counted in episode one.
Oh, I think it's me.
Dylan, then.
I'll count us in to the titles, which we've all got in front of us. In...
And then give us the thumbs up.
Yeah. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Episode 3, let's go.
Diddly dum. Diddly dum, diddly dum.
Well, it's the BBC iPresents that's my favourite bit of these titles, actually. I just think it's better than that weird Disney logo with the Dapple TARDIS, isn't it?
Yeah. What's the I? Is it just BBC Internet?
BBC Internet, yeah. We all love the internet back then.
That's lovely.
It was a new thing. We're all there watching our webcasts on our message boards talking about how much we hate Doctor Who.
Of all Doctor Who media I've watched on the TV and things like that, this was the one of all of them that I didn't want Rachel to come in and watch me catch me watching. I tried to hide this away.
Even more than The Stranger.
At least The Stranger, even if it's terrible, is actual people on the screen.
I think
my biggest embarrassment.
I couldn't be caught watching this with French
subtitles.
When
I was caught watching a recon, and my partner at the time walked in and he went, why are the pictures not moving on the telly? And I had to explain what a recon was, and he just walked out of the room and shook his head. He never made love to me again.
I'm so glad that the Hooniverse didn't go down the route of putting recons on there, because I just think it's the dark secret of Doctor Who fandom, isn't it, that we sit and watch recons?
Yeah. But it is great that they're putting the soundtracks on BBC Sounds. Mm. I think that's nice.
Listening to us today, it's all about pushing the old stuff into a new, a more modern way of watching it rather than pictures and audio.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a shame she didn't walk in on you. I'd love to know what she said.
Well, it's funny though, because this is my own fan brain working, but I'll buy the animation. I'll sit there and watch the Macro Terror on the TV and not worry about it. But if I was watching this, I'd be worried, because yeah, I know it's bad and it's not canon.
Yeah.
And that might just translate.
Now, we're down in these tunnels with the Not Unit, and I quite like the relationship between the army and the Doctor here, and they sort of have these conversations about, oh, you know, you'll do this, we'll do this, and you'll go and do something eccentric, blah, blah, blah. And then we get this creature, which is a colony creature of them, which looks just like the fucking Slither from our first date.
It really looks like the Slither. That's the worst bit of animation in this whole thing, isn't it? That looks terrible. It looks like, it literally looks like someone in a duvet with teeth.
It was very traditional Doctor Who.
Yeah. You made a good point there, though. Mm. Do you know, I don't sound shocked. You make a lot of good points. But what you said about the relationship between the two of them, because there's a sort of self-knowingness to this, a post-Buffy self-knowingness, yeah, that we know the Doctor Who cliches now, and we're going to hang a lantern on it, and we're going to sort of wink at the audience quite a bit.
And he pays it off later, where the Doctor says to him, "I'm just, what are you going to do?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm just going to do something eccentric." And it's a little moments like that where I do find the Doctor finding his feet. And I love this.
I really like this bit. Where the Doctor jumps into the slurm worm.
Yeah.
Doesn't he go, yee-haw?
It's just a bit nuts, and it's the first moment that makes his Shalka Doctor not feel as cold as he has.
The way that TARDIS console is animated with that spiral staircase and everywhere, I just love that. I think that's a fabulous console.
Really. I think it's really great, yeah. I mean, it's a bit TV movie as the console, but...
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Oh, no, I love the TV movie console.
They could be animating that dreadful Matt Smith console from Series 5.
Oh,
you know. God. All chrome and glass.
You have to see that one to appreciate the beauty. It can't be drawn.
Beauty, yeah. All right. I was going to say, actually, because, again, about the sort of postmodern jokes about Doctor Who. And I'm not just saying this to annoy you, Luke. It is what I think. It is far less offensive than, you know, the way Moffat does it.
It's less just offensive, so, but it's not
it's
as
subtle.
Funny.
It's subtle. It's way funnier because it is subtle.
What, you're cracking yourself up.
It's not grabbing the audience and going, you know, we're doing Doctor Who, laugh, you know, like so many.
So you jokes. Were watching Screw the Shark and laughing your head off at these jokes.
I chuckled a few times, yeah. I don't think the dialogue's terrible.
There was one moment in this episode where the Shalka goes, "We now understand the conceit of your craft," and the Doctor goes, "Really? Would you mind explaining it to me?" And I have a little chuckle. I was like, "Yeah, he can do the comedy, you know."
You tell him, Dylan. Yeah,
I like this. I think the first two, as you say, Richard E. Grant's finding his feet. I think he's got it now.
Yeah,
I like him from this point onwards.
Yeah, I think you're right. Paul Cornell, as you said, Joe, I think he said he was uncomfortable and not really sure what he was getting into. I also think he'd never actually seen Doctor Who. So I don't think he realised what he was signing up for. I think he thought he was getting a quick, cheap voiceover job, and then you get a load of press there on your first studio day, and he hadn't actually thought about the character he was playing or what it meant to be involved in a show like this.
Did you hear about that? And he was in a foul mood, wasn't he? He was really horrible to the press. I think that whole...
He might have just not had his Christmas pudding.
Just a textbook example of how not to market something.
Absolutely. Now, this Doctor...
I think showing a still from this would probably be how not to market something. Sorry, Dylan.
Again, I've warmed to this Doctor a lot more in this time around watching it. Do we think post-Capaldi being very off and cold, admittedly more charismatic being off and cold, that actually this Doctor suddenly a bit more accessible in the way that perhaps it wasn't in 2003?
as written, I feel as if this Doctor is far more excited than Peter Capaldi ever was in his first story. So I think it's a good approach. Yeah,
I'd say personally no. He's accessible at this time because it's the new Doctor Who, and it probably was what fans sort of wanted in Doctor Who. Whereas now we've just sort of had better versions of it, if you like it, and worse versions if you don't.
I think it's interesting the other Flash animations have all been fan services in different ways. Death Comes to Time was a bit of an anomaly, but then we've had Sharda and Real Time, which are all very much like ticking boxes for Doctor Who.
Sharda's another one that's bare unwatchable.
Ticking boxes? Do you not remember in Real Time that bit where that man's head explodes and they show all the gunk and the blood going everywhere?
But put in like the year 2000 when Doctor Who's only been watched by Doctor Who fans, an ultra-violent version of Doctor Who.
Totally geared at Doctor Who fans.
Yeah, you know, it's Doctor Who does hard sci-fi in inverted commas.
We got a Wookiee Hole reference there.
Yeah.
Hey.
That was nice, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you love how arrogant the Queen of the Shalka looks?
She's got proper tits, hasn't she?
And like a big crown on her head.
Yeah, she looks like a turkey. Gobble, gobble. But
it's Caroline Forsnick. Sorry.
Now, so they hold the companion over this lava, which is obviously a threat, but I'm sure if you got that close to lava, your face would be peeling and burning. She would come away with third degree burns.
Not in animation.
No, that's true.
Only in real life.
Would you, though? Do you have to...
Well,
do you not have to touch lava to burn?
No, because...
The way the robot master's face just fell open there. That was funny.
No, because they do things like throw things into volcanoes and it bursts into flame before it hits the lava. That's what...
I need to watch a bit. That sounds well more interesting than Scream of the Shell.
Have you seen that Fires of Love documentary about the two volcanologists?
No.
Well worth a watch. It's about two volcanologists who...
I've only heard the Fires of Vulcan with Bonnie Langford saves the people from Pompeii.
Have you seen Planet of Fire?
Have you seen the Planet of Fire special edition with the specially shot sequence of the spaceship crashing?
Absolutely, I have. It's one of the greatest special editions of all time.
I've got to say, I do disagree with both of you, though. I don't think Richard E. Grant does come alive at this point. I think he's very awkward with the humour. He just isn't funny. I just don't think he gets it.
I'm not going to wrap this whole thing.
There's lots I like about this. I just think that was a bad call, putting him in this role.
But is it a bad call if... Because you got to think of the Doctor Who fans this is appealing to at the time.
Yeah, but this is the whole point, which I've got to keep coming back to. It was slated by everyone, including the people that made it.
Yeah, that was the baffling thing, was that they were the ones criticising it as well.
Luke will criticise me in the second half for saying this, but I remember it was announced, and at the Panopticon convention that year, Mark Gatiss... Mark Gatiss introduced the first episode and went, now, here is the first episode of a Doctor Who story called, well, no one gives a fuck about this because the real thing's coming back.
Yeah.
and then introduced like the director and Paul Cornell onto stage.
That sounds like the same sassy Mark Gatiss that made the Equity card, Jim.
Yeah, it's that
bring,
period.
Bring back that Gatiss.
The one thing I love the show coming back, but was the fact that Rossi Davis phoned Paul Cornell and said, I'm so sorry, but we're bringing the show back, so we're shitting all over your BBC iPod.
And he gave him an episode.
And he gave him a shot.
So yeah. I think
Paul Cornell had kind of proved himself at this point.
Now, if I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit here, there was a long time between Doctor Who being announced as coming back and actually coming back. They could have waited another month until this had at least broadcast. But it's literally like the same week or the same
but
2 weeks.
Is it, from Russell's point of view, would you want people thinking that this is in any way related to your new
but
show
I,
that's coming
I think this looks more related when you've announced, because Russell literally says in that issue of Doctor Who magazine, I'm not thinking about it right now. I've still got mine all to complete, but I'll start work on it in 6 months' time. Fuck you, Russell.
Yeah, fuck you for giving us 13 series as a new series and lots of opportunities to argue with each other.
Exactly. Now, all praise the mighty RTD.
Oh, no, I'm having a bit of trouble now because now I'm watching it without the sound and French subtitles. I don't really have a clue what's going on.
This scene's all in French in the original as well.
Oh, was it? Okay.
They're about to get tossed into the black hole.
See, I don't.
Is that the cliffhanger?
Like
yeah.
I don't.
Really,
sorry,
you don't like it.
Not the cliffhanger. The cliffhanger's pretty good. How they flick between calling it a black hole and a wormhole.
Well, it's that. Yeah, and that's
not no. Don't shrug your shoulders.
I was just going to say it's a lovely moment the way the black hole goes into the closing titles just then.
Oh, well done. You know, if this was being geared at Doctor Who, I always feel like the bit where the robot master's face falls off should be the cliffhanger because that's the biggest shock to us.
But it's got nothing to do with this actual story, has it?
No.
When I watched this,
it's the most interesting thing about it.
Yeah, when I watched that, so that's the most interesting thing. But it feels so random.
It doesn't need to be there. It's building up a lore for a series that we're never going to get.
Just like the TV movie,
fellas. You know, I've saved a shock revelation about Screaming the Shouker. You know, because I figured we might flag sort of halfway through, but I'm going to save it for episode 4. Okay,
how exciting
is that? Is that when the real slump hits? Episode 4.
Let's find out.
Are we not at the bottom already?
No, episode 4 and 5. I'm just going to play in some music.
You know, if you did do that, we could just keep talking, yeah, you know, and you'd have something to put out.
It's very true. It's all right, we'll talk about Panopticon 1997
Is this everything you wanted from your 60th anniversary podcast?
Well, actually, what I wanted was something to go out daily, so this is working pretty well for me. And on that note, shall we skip into episode 4?
I'd love to.
Somebody say cut it there.
Cut it there. Doctor Who! Too hot for TV.